Welcome to the 12-Step Recovery Evolution podcast. Visit recoveryevolution.co.uk for more episodes, helpful resources and links to our social media. Also visit the site for information on how you can attend a future Zoom session or workshop live. Thank you.
Everybody, selfishly, I'm really grateful that there's only 9 people on here. As they come through the last two, I could feel my heart beating and pounding a little bit more, hoping that there wasn't anybody else that followed, being completely selfish. So I've been asked to speak about creative amends. My name's Siobhan, and I identify myself as an addict. I entered East Coast Recovery in 2010 after attending 2 previous residential rehabs and having quite a few detoxes off of substitute medication, including heroin, Subutex. And I started my journey in East Coast. I was really fortunate when I was in there. I went through the steps and I left the rehab with a list written on a small square of paper of the amends that I would go back into the community where I lived and start clearing up. And on reflection, I think it's important for me to mention that I live in the same flat that I lived in, that I took all my substances in, and so for me it was crucial that I went back to the area, because that was where I was going back to live. I was going back to collect a child that my parents had, who was 7, and I was entering the area that I'd caused a lot of misery and carnage over the years. And so on my small piece of paper was intermediate family. So there was my parents, my brother. I think my parents had really been through the mill. I've got a sister also who's a heroin addict. She's still a heroin addict to this day. So my parents had really been afflicted with what substances can do to families. Often stealing off my parents, lying, cheating, manipulating them all. And I think also just sort of having that safety net, that always knowing that I could go that step further in addiction because my parents had my child. So I knew that there weren't really any boundaries. So I came back and I individually sat my mum and dad down. And at that time, I think the best that I could give them was, I remember acknowledging that I'd let them down as a daughter. I think that was really important that I used that terminology to them. And both my parents acted exactly the same. They gave the feedback as in, Siobhan, we just want you to be okay, you know, please, this is the last time. And it was really short and sweet and quite loving. And then I attempted to do an amends to my brother in active addiction. Me and my sister, I used to often, there's 10 years between me and my brother, he's 10 years younger than me. So I started to go into residential rehabs when I was 29. And so my brother was 19. So all of his, you know, teenage years, going into like being an early man, was me and my sister taking drugs. And we'd often go into his bedroom and steal items out of his bedroom that my parents had bought him, you know, like Xbox games, anything that really had any value. And in that carnage and chaos that we used to create, I stole a gold bracelet that my mum and dad bought for him for his 16th. And when I cleaned up that, really had the most profound impact on me of how not only had I done all the other things to him, but that had sentimental value. And so I attempted at that time, I mean, it's important to take into consideration that coming into recovery, I've not been in employment since I was about 18. So I'd, for numerous years, like 10, 17 years. I've been on either job seeker's allowance. So my income was really pitiful, you know, at that time. So I didn't have the money to repay my brother back the value of the bracelet. But I was guided and told, you know, you need to approach. And that's what I did. And I remember sitting with my brother and around my mum's and owning that I'd taken the bracelet off of him and sort of give him an opportunity to say how it was for me. And my brother let me have it. You know, he really tore into me. He spoke about how he was embarrassed and he was ashamed and how he'd pull up in a work van and him and his work colleagues would be in the van with workmen and I'd be standing at my parents' door in somebody else's trainers and, you know, dirty clothes, begging for a fiver off my mum and dad. And he was like, I don't know if I want to cry. And he was, you know, so ashamed, just despised me, absolutely hated me and was able to tell me that. And I think what that did was allowed my brother to have a voice, you know, and we sort of just sat there and cried and I told him that I'd taken the bracelet. And, you know, I think what really becomes apparent when you get into recovery is that you think that you're illusional, that you live in an illusion, that you're see-through, that nobody knows what you're doing. But he knew that I'd taken the bracelet. So he sort of said that to me. And at that time, there wasn't really much of a relationship between us. You know, I'm 10 years older than him. He'd lived in my mum and dad's house. He still lived there. And even though he had two older sisters, it was as if he was an only child, if that makes sense. And so he didn't have no respect for us, you know, for me or my sister. Completely didn't have lost all respect through what actions we had. And if I'm honest, that means, you know, was just the start, really, of trying to build that relationship. It took a lot of more effort towards my brother. You know, at times he'd try and challenge me. At times he'd disagree with me. He'd be quite hurtful and use words like, you know, you're a drug addict. And, you know, and it took me to about, you know, 15 months, maybe 11 months to start saying, you know, I haven't taken a drug for 11 months. You know, it was, and I think that part of it was also that amends to me, you know, to be able to start standing up for myself in that dynamic. And I've got a job in, I've been really fortunate in recovery. You know, I've had really good opportunities. I was attending a meeting and there was a, you know, a few characters, and because I've been around the fellowship prior to staying clean, had a few connections, and a gentleman offered me a job and I took the job, and my first wages that I got, I remember texting my brother and saying to him, can you meet me downstairs? And I give him I think it was like 375, you know, I give him cash and he got in the car and he didn't really say anything in that moment. He took the money and I got a text off him about an hour and a half later and it said, Siobhan, I respect you for doing that. And that was so big. It was so important for that message to be there for my brother, that not only am I in recovery, I'm putting right what I did, you know, and I wasn't able to do that till I was like 2 years, I think, in recovery, because I wasn't in employment. But, you know, it just confirmed, made that amends concrete, that dynamic between me and my brother. And honestly, my brother's like my best friend. He's, you know, had a relationship breakup. He had a baby with a girl. They bought a house together. I've been able to support him through it. He's been in my place, crying on the settee when the relationship broke up. And I've been able to really love him, you know, be that bigger sister that I never was. You know, 10 years is a big gap. And it was never that there was that 10 years there, because for James, there was no sisters, if that makes sense. So, you know, and I strongly believe that confirming by giving that funds was evidence that I was serious, that I meant this, you know, and I briefly explained in the beginning that I went back to the community that I used in, and I remember a sweet shop, you know, literally you could throw a stone out of my window to where the sweet shop is, and I'd be in there, you know, often undervaluing, shoplifting some of his sweets or whatever we could get our hands on, and you know, and if he challenged us, I'd be really abusive. You know, I'd start to call him names and try and intimidate him. And I went in there and done an amends to him. And yeah, like when I literally first come out of East Coast, and I remember him at the back, like sort of put his arms around me, and I'll be 10 years in October. And it's a really funny dynamic with this sweet shop owner, because what he does is when I go in there to buy anything now, he gives me the out-of-date stuff free. So that's been the benefit of doing the amends to this gentleman. Is I was in there the other day and he sort of called me over in his Indian voice and handed me, you know, a loaf of bread. And I think, I don't really need it. But he's, you know, he's so convinced that he's helping me by giving me, and sometimes they do sweets and chocolate. And so, yeah, that's been really rewarding. You know, it's been really crucial that I'm able to go into that sweet shop and show a clear message that, you know, I've recovered and recovery is possible, you know. And I think, as well as particularly that Indian gentleman, you know, there's some other workers that have been in there that have known me in my using. And sometimes you'll get the local alcoholic or, you know, heroin addict that be in front of me. And when they leave, he'll ask questions. You know, that's been important. Like, you know, how did you do it? Or, you know, are you still okay? And just to be able to say, oh, no, still not taking any alcohol, nearly 10 years, you know, and sort of smiling has been massive, really, I think, you know, for the community. Also, I think my sister was on my little piece of paper. You know, I was really fearful that my sister was going to die because of addiction. And I was also really resentful to my sister that she hadn't got clean. My sister took me to 12-step meetings and just left me there. And I continued on the process of trying to seek recovery, and my sister hasn't. And part of that amends, you know, was to be able to forgive my sister that it was active addiction, and I can't control the outcome, you know. And I think the best thing that I can do for my sister is stay in recovery, you know, is to show her that actually, even with a child, all that pain, you know, hurt and guilt of what we do when we're mothers to children, I've been able to overcome that, you know, and stick, no matter what, no matter what's thrown at me, I'm still sticking. And, you know, and just pray for her that one day, you know, that she is willing for recovery, you know. But what's been crucial is I've stayed. Also on the amends, in regards to the community, was I was in a relationship with my daughter's dad for about 9 years, and it become really just poisonous towards the end. You know, it was both unfaithful, and drugs were a key factor of that, you know, becoming so intoxicated that you'd wake up and not knowing who you'd been with that night. And that happened to my little girl's dad. And in addiction, a child was born, you know, on literally on the estate that I live opposite. When I cleaned up, prior to cleaning, you know, coming off substances, I absolutely hated with a vengeance this girl. You know, I'd take substances off the back of seeing her walk along the road, you know, and I'd be abusive to Lois's dad and abusive to her. We'd had scraps in the streets and completely deluded that she's making me take the substances. And she was on that little bit of paper when I left East Coast then a few years ago. And I went over to her property, and I knocked on her door. And bear in mind, she's still in active addiction. So she's really thin. She looks like she's in active addiction. And she opened the door and she told me to F off and slammed the door in my face. And And I feel like I did the amends, you know, and when I look back, I think her request was to make for me to F off, if that makes sense. And that's what I did. So I left, she slammed the door in my face and I went away, you know, and over the years, I feel completely different towards her. You know, I still see her about. She's had numerous more children. She's still taking heroin and crack. Sometimes she often scores at the back of where I live. And I just feel sad for her. You know, I really do. And, you know, my little girl's dad, he's not got a great relationship with that little boy. And I'm able to ask how he is. And try and encourage him to make communication. I'm able to let my daughter have her own decision, whether she wants to have contact. Sometimes my little girl decides to go out of her dad and the little boy. Sometimes my little girl don't. You know, she's 15. And I feel, yeah, honestly, completely and utterly different towards that girl through doing that. And I think, and I didn't know whether she'd fight me when I knocked at the door. I didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but I just know I had this bit of paper and nothing was going to stop me from staying clean. And if it meant knocking on this girl's door, then that's what it took. You know, so I've had some really wonderful experiences with amends. I'm just slowly having a nose at my bit of paper to prompt my thinking. I remember this amends, which is quite, I can't even think of the word. It's really credit to what the power of the program is. So when I was about 18 months clean, I was sitting in a cinema with another fella that I used to, you know, go to meetings with when I first got clean. He had his little boy and he started to tell a story about taking money from somebody's house. And I remember the film that we were watching, was watching Batman, and all of a sudden from the pit of my stomach come through my lungs, up my throat, into my mind, this memory of being invited to a wedding. And going to the wedding and creeping into the girl's bedroom on her wedding day and opening up one of her gifts and taking some cash out of this envelope. And I believe that when you first do that process of steps, you're only touching what your conscious lets you, if that makes sense. So as time goes on, it allows you to thaw out and to remember other painful stuff. And I remember ringing the girl who helps me and telling her what I'd remembered and planning how I was going to approach the amends. And she also lives in the area where I live. So I found her on Facebook and I messaged her to say, can I meet you at local CAF? And I remember walking down to the CAF. I was working at this time. And I walked down to the CAF and I was phoning the girl who helps me in the toilet frantically from the CAF toilet. And I approached the front of the CAF and a car came round, like, you know, like one of them space sort of cars where you can get a few people in. And I remember thinking, oh my God, she's going to have brought her sisters to beat me up, you know, once I admit what I've done, or this could go the other way. And she calls the police, and I remember running back into the toilet and ringing the girl who still helps me now and explaining my thinking to her. And, you know, she was sort of like, right, hang on a minute, let me think, you know, really taking that time to process what was happening and how to best to guide me. And so I bit the bullet and went back to the front, and the girl was approaching and she was on her own, and she sat down and I said to her, you know, what I'd done, that on the day of your wedding I'd been in your bedroom and I'd taken an envelope with some cash in it, and, you know, I just want to say sorry, and here's the cash. And she broke down in tears, and so did I, and we were both crying, cuddling each other. And she said that it was like a school kids holiday, and she said her kids were in the car and she didn't have the money to bring them into the CAF, and the money that I'd just give her, she could bring the kids in there, you know. And I remember really yeah, just really cuddling her and just feeling like, I can't describe it, as just relief. It was just so much relief that this was out there. It was cleared up and it was out in the universe. And, you know, I was able to hold my head that little bit straighter. And I think, you know, just touching back on my mum and dad, you know, a massive part of the amends to them was, you know, to stop taking funds off of them. So when I got into recovery, I described, like, I was really on the basic. I was never one of them who was stable enough to manipulate a system. So I could never go on to sick benefits, say, or, you know, I pretend that I was on some sort of medication, because I couldn't get to the job centre. So I was just always on, like, your basic rate. And through my early beginning of my recovery, my parents were still paying for my daughter's, you know, school meals. My mum and dad are really proud, so they'd never take, you know, support off the government. So my mum and dad were still paying for that. They were still paying for her school shoes. They were still paying for her school trips, her school coats. And I remember another gentleman, you know, that I know quite well in recovery, you know, sometimes I'd be quite resentful to my mum about, you know, how that sometimes there was control. And I remember him saying, Siobhan, as soon as you take responsibility for yourself and start to stop taking that stuff off them, you'll feel that less of control and you'll be able to healthily challenge. And so, you know, for me, with my mum and dad, it was about, stop taking that money, you know, get into employment. And in the beginning, that gentleman that offered me the job, you know, I really loved it there, and unfortunately had to let me go, and I went back onto benefits for a shorter period of time. But I think the point I'm trying to make is, I took the gamble. I come off of benefits, went and got employment, didn't know what was going to happen, went back on benefits, and then went back into employment. And each time that happened, I was able to take less off my parents, if that makes sense. Yeah, so that's been like an ongoing amends, you know, particularly with my mum. I really struggle with that dynamic with my mum, and the amends has been, you know, trying to take guidance off of people who know about the relationships and dynamics, you know, and being told and being willing to listen and have an open mind about, you know, trying to improve, like, communication, trying to be able to use words that are not familiar for me or my family. And that's still going. You know, I'm still asking questions. I still want to be able to improve that dynamic. You know, and also I mentioned in the beginning that I've got a little girl, so she came back to live with me when she was 7. I was really lucky that there wasn't any court orders involved. So my parents just took blowings each time that I'd go to rehabs, or, and it was really, you know, pitiful. And my parents gave me back Lois the day I left ECR. So the next morning I was on the school run, and it was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. I remember putting earphones in my ear, just trying to send a clear message to other parents, stay away from me. You know, I cannot communicate. And so, yeah, so that amends was there again for my parents, because it enabled me to take some responsibility to be a mum, and the amends was not making them in their, you know, early, that time my mum and dad were in their late 50s, you know, not having to get out and do the school run with a 7-year-old, you know, what a liberty, expecting them to do that. And despite how painful and horrendous it was, I kept doing it, you know. And for Lois, I remember speaking to the girl who helps me and saying to her, you know, I don't feel like a mum, you know, and I remember her saying these words, well, that's because you've not gone to parents' evening, you've never collected her from school, you don't cook dinners, you don't stand in the playground, you know, and just owning stuff that I hadn't done, and that's why I felt like it. And when I started to do that stuff, I started to feel like a mum, you know, it's as easy as that. I started to go to parents' evening with Lois, started to be accountable to the school, started to be accountable to trying to do homework with her, And all of a sudden, I started to feel like I was her mum. And Lois has been, ongoing as well. You know, last September, I went to back to Lowestoft, and I felt, and I was like 9 years, and I felt like something had just given up. You know, something inside, I needed something else, and I was really struggling with that dynamic with her, and I started to, you know, be able to own that actually I'd harmed her and neglected her in recovery, you know, and that's a tough one because you have to swallow what you'd already done previously in addiction, and then you come into recovery and you're not even aware that you're doing it, but you know, you get to a little bit long, I don't frighten you, but you get a little bit along, and it starts to become apparent that, you know, I was disconnected from her, I wasn't present, you know, and what I was doing, you know, that really stern parenting, you'll do this and you'll be that, you know, and really abusive to her, you know, and being able to own that actually, I wanted to live my life through Lois. You know, it's what I want to be, what I didn't, you know, turn out to be. And because of that, I want her to be the best person possibly in the world. And, you know, I said to her that I'm, you know, willing to take guidance and suggestions. And, you know, I went to Lowestoft and spent some time with Lester. And, you know, one of the suggestions was to go home and let Lois write, bearing in mind she's 15, the things that she don't like about me. And I've always been willing. That's the point I'm trying to make. You know, I've always tried, not straight away, but if it gets painful enough, I'll try anything. And I went home and got Lois to complete this task. And the first thing that she wrote was, you don't listen. And the second thing was that you don't stop saying that you want me to be a scientist. And, you know, and it was a real revelation for me that, you know, actually she don't even like science. It's me who wanted to do something in science. You know, it's me who'd mention forensic science 15 times a day. I'd push her up to the science stall, you know, and never listening to actually she don't even like it, you know, and not listening and just, you know, saying something or me challenging her and not letting her express what she felt about what I was challenging her about, you know, and what has come from that is that Lois needs some outside support. So I don't think just because of the behaviour that I did to Lois, you know, this could be previous trauma, this could just be where she's at, but it is, you know, unfolded that she needs some support. And I've been able to do that with her. I've been able to take her to the GP. You know, about 2 weeks ago, we did an hour and 10 minutes consultation on Zoom, me and Lois sitting there. She's been able to talk a bit more. You know, she's been able to hopefully get the therapy that she needs. I've been able to pay for private counselling for her since about September of last year, which is all part of that amends for Lois, is, you know, again, tying it in with the amends to my parents, not taking the money off of them, being able to work, be independent and provide that myself for Lois. Yeah, so I think, you know, I was flicking through my big book that is falling apart. It's actually from East Coast. It's been through the war with me. And there's a little bit, you know, a really small bit on page 83 at the end. It just says, and there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful and considerate and humble without being survey or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And then it goes on to read the step 10 promises. And yeah, and just that little bit, I just thought, you know, I think it, even in them amends that, you know, were really difficult in the beginning, I wasn't aware of you know, the process, but I was just doing it out of fear because I didn't want to, you know, go back to the life that I'd come from. But as you go on, you know, like touching on Lois or, you know, my mum, it's still being able to stand tall, if that makes sense. You know, it's not about completely lying down to let somebody, you know, walk over you know, that's my take on it. He's still saying, you know, it says that we don't crawl before anyone, you know, because we are human beings. And I think that you know, that short little sentence in there is not only is it enlightening, it's really comforting as well, because I think we're so damaged when we come in. We sometimes can lose that we are people, you know, and a lot of what we've done, we wouldn't do now. You know, with your right sane mind, you wouldn't abuse the people that you love around you, you know, and I think, you know, it sounds like I'm contradicting because I'm talking about, you know, the abuse that I'm doing with Lois, but the difference is I've got an awareness of that, if that makes sense. So there's an awareness around what I'm doing to Lois or was doing to Lois, and that I've put in practices, seek support, got Lois to seek support in order to improve that. But previously, I had no choice, if that makes sense, because the substance that I was taking far outweighs the power or the love between a mother and a daughter. I hope that makes sense, what I'm sort of trying to get across. And yeah, I just think that, you know, for me, without making them amends, particularly in the community, I wouldn't have been able to continue to live here. You know, there's not many people that you speak to that live in the same property that they use the substances in. So all that misery, all that drug taking, all that, you know, child abuse, all the stuff that went on, you know, the harm was all in this flat, you know, and I'm still in here. And, you know, I can look at my neighbours as I walk down the street. I can smile at people. I can hold my head high. And I believe that without putting in them concrete slabs to make that strong foundation for recovery, I wouldn't have been able to have done that, because the guilt and shame and the remorse in the end would just set me alive, and more than likely would have took me back out the door. It wouldn't have made that solid for me, you know. And the immediate family, I think amends is ongoing. So it's not that you do the amends and then that's finished, if that makes sense. Okay, I'm not going to go back into the sweet shop and tell the gentleman, you know, the same stuff that I did 10 years ago. That's a different amends, if that makes sense. The amends to the sweet shop man is that I'm not taking Maltesers, Bounties, Ribenas, anything that I want, and I'm genuinely having some communication skills with him and trying to support him. You know, I'll give you another example. This is just coming to my head. So there's another gentleman who works in the Indian shop. I'm really in with them. They are like my favourite people now. And he started to tell me that his friend is in a domestic violent relationship and there's children involved, and she doesn't know what to tell the family cops. And I know that that's God. I know that that is, because if I'd never done that amends prior to that, I'd never had that respect off of them people in the sweet shop. I mean, why on earth are they asking me? I only want a pint of milk. You know, but there's that energy, that dynamic that's there, that they get that loving sense off of me, that they can ask them outrageous questions, you know. And I work in the drug and alcohol field, so, you know, I'm not a genius, but I know some terminology. And I was able to, you know, say to him that she needs to speak to, you know, her advocate. She needs to make contact to the family courts, you know, and just another I was going to say patient, it sounds like it's one of them sweatshops. Another customer came into the shop and he served the customer and told me to wait because he wanted to talk more about it. I mean, you couldn't write it, the stuff, you know, that goes on in the sweatshop. And I left with, you know, offering some sort of guidance to this gentleman and another loaf of bread the Saturday, you know, again. And, it's been really important, you know, that I've done them amends in the community, like I keep banging on about. And them amends, you know, are ongoing in that sense that I'm polite and I'm a respectful member of society. But the amends that are continuous are the amends that are for your immediate family, you know, and friends, because each day you're approaching different stuff, you know, different stuff's being thrown at you. You know, one day Lois is okay, the next day she isn't, you know, and that's the process of amends, is still trying to approach Lois the best way that I can, you know, with them skills that I learned in the beginning, but the skills that I'm learning as I go on, you know, through seeking through different people. My understanding of amends is that, you know, it allows you to give people that opportunity to say how it is, what it's really been like for them, you know, and the example with that is my brother. Amends also is about trying to rebuild them relationships. You know, I come from a family where we don't really talk about feelings. You know, there is no, oh, that really made me feel hurt the way you spoke to me like that. It's just not terminology that we use. So it's alien for everybody in my family, and learning to drop feelings in a dynamic. You know, my family, they go on with life until they explode, and then they explode quite big and sometimes quite nastily to each other, and then they get up the next day and they pretend nothing's happened, and we go back to the same cycle of you know, pretending that everything's okay, going on with life until the next episode where it explodes. And for me, that the amends has taught me, you know, to be able to try and communicate differently, you know, to be able to put in healthy boundaries and to try and own some of that feelings of how that makes me feel, because my family don't know how to do that. So it's important that somebody takes the lead, and I'm in recovery, so that lead falls to me. And I don't always know what I'm doing, and I'm still taking guidance around it. And I don't know how long I feel like I've been talking. It feels like about 3 days. It may be. I've just looked. It says 43. Another massive amends, I think, is to myself. So when I come into recovery, I came in with no teeth, literally. The ones that I did have were rotting. They'd disintegrated into my gums. I ate quite unhealthily. I didn't drink water. You know, all them basic things that just normal people take for granted. The girl that helped me, you know, suggested, you know, encouraged, motivated me to book a dentist appointment. You know, I went over there. In my pregnancy, I'd had about 15 teeth removed where they'd completely rotted. So I had, you know, a lot of gum and a lot of rotted teeth left in my mouth. And for a woman to go in and have moulds put in their mouth and false teeth taken out and put, it feels like you're nude in there. You know, it feels like you're just revealing yourself. I think, you know, not that it ain't as bad for a man, but I think, for a woman to, you know, lost their teeth, really degrading, and that's how I felt. And I started the process when I first got, you know, better, and I started to go over there, and this was the same dentist that I'd used while I was using. So they'd seen me, you know, with abscesses, banging on their door at 8 a.m. with a baby in my arms, you know, screaming, crying, can you help me, can you help me? So, you know, I think part of the amends for myself, and, you know, was to just stick with the process this time, you know, to show them that actually this time it was going to be different. And I started the process again, and having the molds done, and teeth fitted, and it's been, you know, it's been a long process. Unfortunately, when you lose your teeth, your gums shrink. So I've had to stay with that process, you know, but today I'm able to, smile. I've got confidence. They all sort of match the same colour. And I've been encouraged, and it, you know, and even my my partner, when I met him, you know, I've been with my partner for numerous years now, you know, I remember him encouraging me to go, you know, to stick with it, and because one of them are discoloured, or, you know, so that's been massive for me, and you know, is that body self-confidence, you know, if you've got horrible teeth, you're not going to feel good, you know, that's been my, you know, my experience. And and even when I've got further on in recovery, and, you know, and I'm working, I've gone in there, and, you know, I've been paying for my NHS, you know, my treatment for my teeth, and it's been important for me that I'll continue to do that process, you know. And I think, you know, just touching on the amends for myself, it's been about forgiving, you know, forgiving myself. There's a little bit in here, you know, just after that sentence. He says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor we will shut the door on it. And there's that little bit, you know, I feel like I'd like to, like, tap Bill on the shoulder. You know, I'd like to say to him, excuse me, Bill, there's a little tiny bit in there that I ain't sure about. And, you know, for me, I don't regret the past. How can I sit here and say I don't regret the past? I've got one child. There's no way I would have had one child. You know, I would have had more children, and I would have been healthy for a pregnancy. I wouldn't have took heroin and crack while I was pregnant. My little girl wouldn't have gone to the special care unit to be tested for heroin and crack. I wouldn't have had social services. You know, of course I regret that. But I think what the program's enabled me to do is live with it. You know, I can live with that. That's been the key, is that I can go on with life forgiving myself for that I've done that. And, you know, even when I spoke about when I come to Lowestoft in September, is, you know, that stuff come up again. You know, that stuff where I could just burst into tears in front of someone if they mentioned Lois's name, because that pain is still in there. You know, you're still living with that, but slowly I'm coming to terms with that. Yeah, I did do that, and I'm still capable of doing some of that in recovery. Okay, what am I going to do about that? You know, and getting the support that I need to be able to be a better mum. And you know, I was 40 in February, and I entered a gym when I was about 39, I think. Even though I'm quite chatty and my personality can be quite big, the thought of entering a gym with people in leotards, you know, that is what my mind would tell me, or, real keen fanatics, just used to cripple me. You know, and my friend introduced me to the gym, and there's periods when I don't go, you know, but I think what I've learned through that stuff of amends to myself is that is part of looking after myself. You know, when I do try and do something, when I do try and do some sort of fitness, I generally feel better. You know, when I do make the effort, whether it's to go for a walk, whether it's to get a bit of fresh air, whether it's to try and do some sort of exercise, not all the time do I know what I'm doing, but I'll give it a go. I know that I feel better, you know, and that's part of that means to me as well. Yeah, I'm drying up. Yeah, I just think that out of all the program, like steps 1 to 12, amends could not be there. Do you know what I mean? It's placed at the right position. You do the 4, you take the people's names, you do the 5, 6, and 7, and then the 8 creates the list. You know, I just think it's just placed really nicely, you know, for you to move on to 9, 10, 11, and 12. And I think, you know, if you imagine the program without the amends, if that makes sense, it's like we're denying them people to say how it is for them and try to improve that dynamic. You know, like my nan, she's really getting on, and she was on that list when I first left East Coast. And just to be able to own to my nan, you know, that particularly if I was in that area, I'd go up there and I'd tap her for 20 or for, you know, for £10. And just to be able to not do that, you know, to be able to own that I did that and not do that. And the means to my nannies is, you know, to pop in, see her, have a cup of tea, phone her regularly. You know, just imagine that not being there, that means. You know, I think that there is placed at such a crucial place, and without them, I don't feel like I'd be here. You know, I don't feel like if I do give it, that all that I give it, and still do to some extent, you know, particularly with the relationships, I wouldn't have made it. That, you know, I wouldn't have been able to have continued. The guilt, pain and suffering and remorse and all the stuff would have overwhelmed me, and I would have returned to taking a substance, because that is how I operated previously, if that makes sense. That's how I used to operate, is I'd take them substances based on what I thought I was feeling, and they wouldn't have just gone away, them feelings, because I can guarantee you they're still there today. But I'm able to try and develop and improve them relationships. I'm so sorry. I feel like I've come to a complete standstill. So I'm going to leave it there. I hope any of you have got something from my talk today. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've sat through a lot of these, and that was thoroughly remarkable. Just so you know, that was lovely. That was a real clear demonstration of the lengths we have to go to in that making amends. There's a superficial element to making amends. You take the easy, softer option, but sitting in that cafe and running backwards and forwards to the loo to talk to a sponsor. Similar thing happened to me when I walked into a petrol station, and I just had this massive flashback 18 months into sobriety of stealing from an employer when I was 20 something, quite a considerable amount of money over time when I worked in a petrol station. But like you said, it wasn't in my conscious. It didn't get on my list. I didn't go through it with my sponsor, but I immediately left. Actually, I got thrown out of the petrol station because I'm on the phone to my sponsor talking about it. And he's like, get out. You're not allowed to use your phone in here. And then I had to go and make amends. But you're right, stuff can flash back to us. There's a big old list of people that I want to share back, so I'm going to shut up and say hello to Amy.
Siobhan, thank you so much for that. I've got so much out of it and so much identification. I ended up moving, relocating, and I had to not just clear up my flat, but clear up the mess around it that I'd created. And I went to every single neighbour and all the shops that I'd shoplifted from. And I was frightened because most of those people are still in active addiction. But I went and did it. And I know that if I don't go back there, but I know if I go back there, I can hold my head up high. I think at first, my first amends to my mum and dad were really just mumbled apologies, and it was all quite lovely in that. And my ongoing amends to them is I phone them regularly, I go and see them when I can. I think what you were saying about your mum and dad with the financial amends, my dad has looked after my cat and dog since I've been through treatment and even now. But what I do is I pay for him to look after those animals. And there's been times when my mum and dad have offered me money and it would be easy for me to say, yeah, all right, but I don't. And I think that's so important for them to know that I can stand on my own two feet. And I think also what you were saying about your brother, it nearly made me cry, Siobhan, yeah? That was one of the hardest amends I had to make to my brother, and I had to listen to a lot of stuff of how I affected him. And I'm really glad that we were able to do that, because it now has built that relationship where we can talk honestly with each other and we can support each other as a brother and sister. I think it's, what I'll quickly say is that I work, what you were saying about the sweet shop, I work on the food bank, which is like part of my church. And I often, they all know I'm in recovery. And like, it's amazing sometimes because people will come and talk to me about concerns they've got for friends or brothers and sisters or their children about their drug taking. And it's just, that is part of my amends, is to show people there is a way out. But anyway, Siobhan, I've got a lot out of that, but I'm going to leave it because there's quite a few people who want to share back. Thank you so much.
Me? Yeah, sorry, I couldn't hear. Can you hear me, everyone? Yeah, sorry, I can't. It went blank. Yeah, thank you, Siobhan. I got a lot out of that. Yeah, I really did. It was really powerful. Yeah, you're right, like, you kind of disassociate from what you've done. Like when you're in addiction, you block it out. So when I was in ECR, I'd done my amends list, and when I come out, there's so much more that come back to me for what I'd done. And it was like triggers. Like I'd see people, as you said, you know, you're watching that film and something come up for you. And I get it now, you know, so it is like, you know, a work in amends, isn't it? It's ongoing. With my parents as well, I mean, I come back and, you know, I've done a lot to them. And all they could say was, you know, just get better. That's all they wanted for me. And it's a work in amends with them, because when I come out, they didn't trust me. They didn't think I was going to do so well. And I'm nearly 8 months clean now. And they're so proud of me. They took my children off me. They obviously didn't want them, you know, social services getting involved. And they're in their late 50s. My dad was ill with cancer at the time. He's in remission now. He thinks, okay. But I mean, he was getting up and struggling to walk and having to take them to school. And it just breaks my heart now, you know, that they had to do that. And my granddad's in his 80s. He was picking my daughter up from school. So it's just horrible, you know, what you put them through. And then to get sober and to look back. And, you know, I did dwell on it for a long time. But now I don't. I just, you know, I'm just happy that I'm doing well. And I don't want to go back there because, you know, it is my ongoing amends to them. And, you know, we're like a family unit again. And it's just so nice that I can be in this position now. But yeah, it really, I did get a lot from your share, so thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that, Laura. I forgot to unmute my mic. I'm chatting away. Right, up next is Amber.
Hi, Siobhan. Hi, Fox. Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you as well. I got so much from that. It was so articulate and you covered so much ground and so many different examples. And obviously, your experience of working with people in recovery, other addicts and that, it comes through massively because you really, you know, it was just definitely one of the most tangible talks about making amends that I've heard. And you know, it really got me thinking, because at the moment I've got amends primarily to my mum, my dad, my partner, his family and my grandma. And there's sort of conflicts between what people want from me, and especially in terms of work, like geographical location, where I'm going to live, because I'm on step 9 at the moment, and so you know, I'm like with my grandma, for example, I was always there for her, and then in the couple of years where I was really using crack heavily, I not only did I take money from her, but I wasn't there for her. And she's, you know, she's 90 next year, and we've always been so close, and I've always been the one that, you know, is sort of see her sort of 4-5 times a week, every week since 2014, and I wasn't there for the last couple of years, and I haven't spoken through. I don't quite know how to approach this because I've only just got to step 9. I think I need a bit more help with it. I mean, I'm talking to God, meditating, praying on it, whatever you want to call it, and trying to get the answers and being patient with it as well, not trying to push it with people. But I'm really worried that my mum's not going to want me to go back to the area because she's got a resentment with my grandma, and I'm anticipating it quite a lot. And I suppose I've just got to be patient and see what happens. But there's loads of food for thought there, loads of food for thought. And another thing that made me sort of sprung to mind was maybe, you know, if I don't get to relocate back near my grandma, maybe that's going to be my regret. Maybe that's my cross to bear, you know, although I feel like I'm letting her down in the last years of her life. And I just think it's unnecessary, but I mean, I don't know, but thank you. I've got so much from that, so much to think about, and I'm really grateful. Thank you so much, and well done, you know, come so far, and it's just brilliant. It's really, yeah, thank you. You can help other people so much by your story, so thank you.
Thank you. And lastly, we've got Eliza.
Hello, hi. Thank you so much for that, Siobhan. That was just very moving and really actually good. I wanted to hear all that. I came out at ECL with my list, but then I got a new sponsor who wanted me to go back to one again, and I'm a bit conflicted about that, to be honest. I think I'm 7 months, but I've been in and out of I've never had recovery, but I've been in and out of sobriety quite a lot over the years. And you know, my communication is what you were saying about, you know, learning to communicate, you know, and communicate with my family. And I mean, I'm 51 now, and I've, you know, basically haven't had an adult, you know, relationship, I don't think, with my family, really. I mean, I haven't been living with them. I've been financially independent. And, you know, I never had any children because of my drug addiction. It's quite a hurdle, and I keep trying to do the legwork, but then I seem to get quite easily deterred. It's like, because, you know, I always keep going back to I don't feel part of, and then I sort of, you know, but obviously this has been peppered with relapses, so something that I really want to work towards, because it's definitely it's not feeling part of, and not having the relationship that I crave so much. But you know, but then I often think, but I don't really know how to. I don't know how to do that because I've never done it, and I got so much out of it. And I mean, what you said about teeth and things like that. I mean, you know, and you know, all of that stuff, that self care and that looking after yourself. But yeah, building relationships and communication. And being honest, I was recently with Lester, just realised, you know, I'm not honest about my emotions with anyone, really. And I think that's that's where I've started. I did a practice the other day with a friend. I said, I trust you well enough to tell you, be honest with you. Anyway, and I did it. So I did it. So I made a start. So, but yeah, thank you. It was really brilliant. It was really fantastic. So generous of you and kind. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Vanessa.
Yeah. Thank you, Fox. Thank you, Siobhan, for your share. Like everyone said, it was absolutely fantastic, and it was so relatable. For me, I've been writing down as you were talking because my memory is so bad, I forget stuff, so I better write it down. But I liked when you said to write down the things that they don't like about me. I've got four boys, and my eldest is almost 30 this year, and my youngest is 13. He's going to be 14 next month. And obviously with my elder children, I've missed out on so much. My eldest son, he lived with my mum from a baby. She brought him up, more or less. Well, she did bring him up. And so I've got to make amends to her, and I've got to make amends to him. And as you all know, my mum's really ill, so I'm struggling with that. And then I have resentments towards my eldest son, because when I want to talk to him as a mother, I can't, because I've not been his mother. My mum has. So he's not as responsive, and I have to understand that. So what you were talking about with your daughter and how you're dealing with that really had me thinking. You know, in regards to my parents and my husband who's just passed, I relied on them heavily to raise my children. You know, after with my first two boys, it was, you know, my mum who more or less raised them. But with my last two, it was my husband who I more or less made take charge. So now that he's gone, I'm left to do it, and I'm struggling. And I can't go to my mum because she's not well enough. So it's just me. I've got to do this. And, you know, I keep listening to the things that my mum's always told me, remembering the things that my husband told me in regards to raising them. But because I've been absent for so long, obviously I'm going to have hurdles because they're going to resist. And I can't resent them for the resistance because I haven't been present. But yeah, your talk was fantastic. It really was relatable. And this journey is long, boy. But thank you, Siobhan. God bless you.